This ship is wrecked. The cliffs came so fast. I just closed my eyes, but you closed your heart. I couldn't give you love. I couldn't give you love. I couldn't give you love. If you let me in, I wish you could see the world like me. We could stop the rain. Oh, it's such a shame. I couldn't give you love. I couldn't give you love. I couldn't give you love. If you let me in. If you let me in.
And welcome to episode 6 of Two Peas in a Drama Pod, where two twins like to talk about Asian dramas. I'm Sandy.
And I'm Cindy.
This week, we'll be talking about episode 18 of Gaxi Tao. We've got some news lined up for you, and we'll also be reviewing City Hunter. Now, since we're on the topic of tortured heroes, Korean people. So, let's go straight into news. Well, for those of you who keep up with Hong Kong stars, one of this year's most anticipated films is Andy Lau's thriller, Switch, which is kind of like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but with a little bit different. The plot is about a famous painting called Dwelling in the Fuchun Mountains from the Yuan Dynasty. Painting gets stolen and it's sold in the black market, and it's up to the special agent Andy Lau, who acts a whole lot like James Bond, to recover the painting. According to the trailer, that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm thinking. And there's this woman named Chilling Lin is his wife, and he starts to drift apart from her because of his work. But he finds out she's also a secret agent who's asked to protect the painting. So, it's a whole lot like Mr. and Mrs. Smith in that there's two secret agents who are married to each other out to protect this painting.
And I'm sure at the end they'll also get back together.
Maybe. Mr. and Mrs. Smith was marketed as like a comedy, but I watched the trailer for this and it doesn't really seem to be marketed like that. And also, the trailer wasn't very good in that it did not get me hyped for this at all. There was pretty much not any, there was no dialogue in the trailer. It was just a bunch of like special effects and fighting and yeah. I had no idea what the movie was about from the trailer. So they need to do a better job with their trailer. But the trailer was really good quality, like a really high quality video. And apparently the special effects for it are done by, or the 3D effects for the movie are done by Chuck Komisky, who did this. He did the special effects for Avatar, or he was a supervisor for it. So I don't really know what kind of special effects they need to do for this movie, because it's not really like Avatar in that they're creating a whole new world, but whatever. Apparently it's got really good effects. So people can look forward to that at the box office. And actor Jang Kin-suk celebrated his birthday on the beach. He tweeted on August 4th, "My phone kept ringing, so I thought something had happened in Korea, but it was my birthday." So, yep, I guess he forgot his birthday. And you guys should probably go check out the pictures, because he's really, he reminds me of like a puppy dog or something in his pictures.
Yeah, I recently started Love Rain with Jang Kin-suk in
it. Yeah. And how's that going for you?
I mean, it reminds me a lot of that one Korean film. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a really, really famous Korean film. and it's about the two, the mom and the dad, or I can't remember their names, but they meet in the past, but because his best friend likes her, his best friend marries her, and he goes off to war or whatever, and they aren't allowed to be together, and so it's up to their son and daughter to, you know, bridge this generation, a generation of love, essentially, and they become, you know, soulmates or whatever.
Doesn't it have, like, a letter or something in it?
Yeah, I think it's got a letter. Yeah, but Love Rain sounds, or the plot of it is, like, exactly like that, but obviously since it's a drama, there's more character development. And it's also, like, Jang-in Sik's character is also a douche instead of in the normal movie where he's actually a nice person. But when you're in a drama, you can obviously have more facets and stuff, so. But yeah, yeah. It just sounds a lot like the plot of that movie.
Yeah.
And I can't remember it. If I remember the name of the movie, I'll put it in the show notes.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good. It's not very dramatic. It's kind of subdued, almost. It's just like one of those nice classic movies. Like, you know, you've seen like romantic classics in the U.S. and stuff. It's kind of like that. It's like an innocent love. So, yeah.
Continuing. Okay, well. Well, and speaking of the Olympics that's going on right now, whoever has been watching, the most recent episode of SBS's Good Morning showed EU cheering for Korea's national soccer team, who made it to the semifinal round. Crazy, wait, right? They're going to be playing Brazil.
They beat Britain?
Yeah, they beat Great Britain. Isn't that crazy?
Oh my gosh, man. Korea making it. Making it on the big stage.
I was just like, wait, EU is in Britain? I don't really know where the Good Morning was, or if she was just cheering for them via TV screen or something, but I was like, if she's in Great Britain, I'm really jealous right now.
Yeah, me too. I'm super jealous. Because I would love to be there in London.
Dude, yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. It would be so awesome. I'm like, Olympics taking over my life right now.
Yeah, one of my friends is in London right now, and he's been to, like, the Olympics. He went to the opening ceremony, and he bought tickets to tennis matches, too.
Who was it?
Someone you don't know. Anyway, back to news.
Oh, it's called The Classic, isn't it? Is it called The Classic?
Oh, possibly. By the name of the movie? Yeah, I think it might be called that. Maybe. I'll make sure later.
Okay. So, yeah, EU's got some Olympic spirit, team spirit. It's awesome. And continuing on, Hallyu star Kim Hyun-jung donated 50 million won to the Beautiful Foundation, which helps senior citizens who live on their own and college students help pay for the tuition and living costs. And the reason he did that was because his fan club first donated $10 million. And after he found out that they did that, he was so touched that he decided to donate $50 million himself, which, dude, makes it even more awesome. And he's currently filming for his new drama, City Conquest, which I can't wait for because I really want to see him again. And even though he's not that great of an actor, I don't even care because he's just really good looking.
He actually, Kim Hyun-jun, or I guess, kind of reminds me of Kim Jae-won.
Who's Kim Jae-won?
The guy who's going to be May Queen.
What's May Queen?
The guy who's in Can You Hear My Heart? With the really pale face.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kim Hyun-jun reminds me of him. He reminds me of Kim Hyun-jun, whatever.
Your face.
Except Kim Jae-won's a way better actor, I think, in my opinion. And the qualities and the quality of the dramas he does is on a slightly higher level than Kim Hyun-jung's dramas, which tend to be guilty pleasures.
Yeah, they really are, because they, like, aren't that really They aren't really that great, but acting wise and stuff, but I watch them anyway because it's got him in it. And just sometimes you just like want to keep watching it, even though you're like, dude, this is probably killing some of my brain cells. Anyway, on another note, Hyundai Lovers has come out. It premiered on August 6th, which is today, but obviously because of the time difference. So we'll be giving our first impressions on that next week. And then to all you See in Blue fans, looks like See in Blue is like really trying to make a big step into the acting world because like all of their members are getting into dramas. The band's youngest member is Lee Jung Shin is set to debut in a drama called My Daughter So Young. So he's doing the ranks of his other members who have already debuted in a drama.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a lot of publicity for the band, at least. Which is,
they're
really way. I mean, Jung Yong-hwa, Lee Jung-hyun, and Kang Min-hyuk all were great in the dramas they did. So maybe this is like one of the few bands that's actually has really good actors too, because I like all of them.
Dude, I love their music too. It's really good.
It's so nice sounding. It's like slightly different.
Yeah, and it's not really like poppy, like really like auto-tuned, like that. They really use the instruments.
Yeah. My favorite See in Blue song is that. Actually, I can't remember the name of the song. But I'll play it at the break. Or actually, I'll play it at the end of the show so that everyone can hear what my favorite See in Blue song is. It's still my favorite. It's like one of their it's
older ones.
One of their, yeah, it's one of their older ones, but it's really good.
Yeah, it's like a couple of years old, maybe. And finally, our final piece of news, the upcoming drama To the Beautiful You, which premieres on August 15th. Woo! So excited. Is apparently getting a lot of attention because it's using state-of-the-art technology called the Matrix filming technique, which was popularized in the movie The Matrix. So, thankfully,
due to the obviousness of the name.
So think about those really slow scenes where Keanu Reeves is like kicking butt and avoiding objects and doing some martial arts.
And, you know, that, defying gravity and all that jazz.
Yeah, that's the technique that they're using. And they're going to use it when Kim Tae-joon, who is played by Mino, performs the high jump, which I don't really think sounds quite as exciting as The Matrix, especially since it's only going to last like 5 seconds. But we'll see how this works out for the drama, and hopefully it doesn't make it seem... I'm sure this will only make it better, not worse, if it's used correctly.
Yeah.
And that's all the news.
Yeah, I'm so excited for To the Beautiful You. Look forward to a review of the Japanese version of Hanakimi in like 2 weeks to anticipate the premiere of the drama.
Yeah, so excited. We'll return with episode 18 recap of Gexy Tile after this music break. 그대 들어오세요 살랑살랑살랑 들려오는 빗소리 두근두근두근두근 떨려오는 내 가슴 살랑살랑살랑 두근두근두근 우산소리 빗소리 내 가슴소리 내려오네요 Okay! Back again, and alright guys, this episode was awesome and intense, and oh my gosh.
Yeah, I thought last end, I was like, what just happened, man? I think I had to watch it a few times, / go on the internet to actually figure out what happened.
Oh, Okay, so I'll do the recap, and then we can talk about everything. So, yeah, this episode was crazy. I didn't think anything would get crazier than the last episode. This episode did, and I'm pretty sure from now on it's going to get even crazier, because this drama is just, like, high speed right now. So the episode opens with Shinji getting a basket of flowers from Mukdan, which, aw, so sweet. Not really, though, because he's evil. And, well, I hate to say he's evil, but he's really evil right now. He gets to the hotel room, and all the guards are unconscious, and Mukdan is gone. What? He finds out from one of the guards that it was Lala's bodyguard, who we'll refer to as just bodyguard. And he immediately rushes over to where Lala, Bodyguard, and Taro are meeting from the previous episode at a location that I don't really know. And he finds out that Gaxi Tao took her. So now we're where the last episode left off, in the forest, where Mukdan finally finds out that Kanto, her mortal enemy, who she thinks is scarier than the devil, is actually Gaxi Tao. What? So, I mean, I can only imagine what's going on right now through her head. Like, a million emotions. She's probably feeling a million emotions right now, and just everything just, like, piling into her head, like, all those moments when Kanto tried to tell her who he was, and all those times when she was like, I hate you, and I love Gaxi Tao, except they're the same person. She's probably just, like, thinking about that and just really, like, punching herself. But I don't care, because it leaves her vulnerable. Kanto gives her a hug, and then he gives her a kiss, which is awesome! Because he totally deserves this moment. He's been alone all this time, and finally, he gets to kiss the girl he loves, which I thought maybe the kiss was a little premature, but it doesn't really matter, because Mukdan was in shock, so there's an excuse. Shinji goes on a rampage to find Mukdan, and when he calls a police meeting, he also notices that Kanto is missing. Or, well, he didn't come to work, so first, Mukdan's missing, and now Kanto didn't come to work. Really suspicious. And Kanto declared that he loves Mukdan. So Shinji's, his jealousy gene is probably really acting up right now. Kanto and Mukdan get to the shack, and they finally get to have a real conversation now that it is made clear that Kanto is actually not going to die. So the first thing she wants to know is how he became Gaxi Tao, and we all know how this happened, so he relays his tale to her, and I love the dialogue on this scene, and we can discuss it more later, but he pretty much says that Gaxi Tao is no longer just something that was his brother's, but it is also something that has become a part of him as well, and he doesn't think he's going to be able to let go of the mask, even after he's exacted his brother's revenge and his father's revenge. So Mukdan, she says she'll always support him, and they hug again. So cute. So Shinji is now looking for Kanto as well, since he found out that Kanto didn't come to work. Mukdan decides to go back to the Asuka Hotel so that Kanto can avoid suspicion. In the process, she also meets with the Freedom Fighters to let them know that Gaxi Tao is injured, so they probably have to change their plans. And it is also implied that they find out what Gaxi Tao's true identity is, but we don't know for sure if they find out or not. Shinji finds out that Mukdan has returned to the hotel room, and she comes up with some story that tries to divert suspicion away from Kanto being Gaxi Tao and slash Kanto in general. And Shinji's satisfied with her story for now, although I don't really think he believes her. He's just going along with the flow because it's Mukdan. And he allows her to stay with at Sunwise, whatever, how you pronounce her name, Sunwise's place. Mukdan sneaks away from the guards while she's at her friend's place to go see Kanto and beg for him not to go to the execution site, especially in a state. We don't really know if he decides to go or not. Back at the police station, Kanto is still not at work, and Shinji now really wants to know where he is. All I am saying is Kanto better have a really, really good alibi or excuse this time. And the chairman of the Kishu Kai finally arrives in town on execution day. Dun, dun, dun. Is Gaxi Tao going to make an appearance? We don't know. First, a riot breaks out to delay Damsari's execution. The people pretty much like start ripping off their outer clothes and only wear their white hung box in defiance to police. But they get subdued quickly, and Circus Lady also gets shot by Shinji, which is awful because he just, like, killed an innocent woman. And then it looks like Damsari's execution is going to continue, but wait! Gaxitao appears! Or is it really Gaxitao? It doesn't really look like him. And he's also using a sword instead of an iron stick. Whoever he is, it's probably one of the freedom fighters. He's got bombs strapped to him, and he blows the place up! What? And that's the end of the episode. Crazy episode. And that scene was just like, oh my gosh, what?
Crazy ending. Like, I'm sure anyone who watched the scene without paying close attention to it would have been like, oh my gosh, Kanto died. But, of course, it would have made no sense for him to die because we still got 10 episodes left of this series. If they kill off G1, I don't know what they're thinking.
But, yeah, there was just no way it was Kanto / G1 because I'm not even Korean and I could tell that wasn't him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think there's a reason that the camera panned in on the steel sword instead of the iron stick.
Possibly. Yeah, I thought it was a really good plan, though, for the Freedom Fighters, because they kind of kept us in the dark about how they were going to save Damsari the entire episode. And if this happens, then we're just like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's crazy, and I really want to know if Kanto actually shows up, because first they have that riot, and then this happens, and Kanto still actually hasn't shown up. Is he going to show up at all, or is this just to try to divert the suspicion away from Kanto as Gaxitao?
Yeah, the thing about this thing, though, it could just be me thinking too much into it, but I think at this point, there was, like, this one really great quote where Mukdan says that Gaxitao is a beacon of light for the Joseon people. And I think this little demonstration shows that Gaxitao is now becoming, like, a symbol. And he's becoming not just a person, but, you know, that beacon, even if it's not really him. Just the fact that someone showed up to, like, give them hope. Maybe, this is just a way of saying that he's being elevated into, you know, a higher level.
An idea, kind of like Batman.
Yeah. Lots of Batman references. This past, like, 2 weeks.
I loved this episode. Well, one, because of all the time that Mokdan and Kanto got together, but I also really, really liked the dialogue that Kanto had with Mokdan about how he didn't think he was going to be able to take off the mask. Because first, it gets insight to what Kanto is thinking. Because so far, we don't really know what he's thinking. And it's just, he's just playing a lot of cat and mouse trying to get away from Shinji and trying to save the Joseon people, trying to save Mokdan. It's just a whole lot of action going on. We don't really know what Kanto's thinking through all this, and I think it's really great because, first, forget what I said about just going back to the Kishukai plot, because I think it's really great that Kanto is really making the mask his own, and it's really interesting. Like, it was so subtle that I didn't even notice it, but Kanto really has, like, transformed into a new person. He didn't just go from being evil Kanto to, like, good Kanto. Like, slowly he, like, became someone who really deserved to wear the mask. And yeah, he's got his issues and stuff, but, like, now he really feels that he needs to protect the Joseon people, and it's not just because his brother did it, but it's because he himself wants to do it, and, like, the mask is now his own, and Gaxitao is now something that is a part of him, and not just something he's doing because of his father and his brother, which I thought was really, really great.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. I loved the way that the screenwriters made this such a subtle change for Kanto. Like, in the beginning, like, they did not portray him as a good guy. Like, we knew that Kanto still was the person. Him as an Imperial officer was totally different from him around his family. Like, him as the Joseon person. And I think that the show did a really good job of his Joseon identity overpowering his, like, you know, desire to be, like, I don't know, a good Imperial officer or a powerful person or just someone well-known. And I think they did a really, really good job of making that sudden transformation subtle. So the dialogue between him and Mokdarn was a really, really great opportunity for that. But one thing that I was a little bit annoyed at was the fact that I wish we had a little bit more conflict with Mokdarn's inner character, like a little bit more internal conflict about the fact that Kangto is Gaxitao. And I wish he had accepted it so readily. It almost seemed kind of shallow. Because, like, did nothing that happened the past, like, few months or so with Kangto the person, all of that is forgiven just because he's Gaxitao. Like, I don't understand how she could accept that so readily and how there was, like, no internal conflict when her hatred for Kangto was so deep. Like, she really hated him. And I don't understand how it was literally, like, as soon as he pulls off the mask, like, okay, I forgive you. Like, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought the kiss and all that and her accepting him really was kind of premature. I really wanted to her to grow to accept it. And I think I would have liked maybe, like, a few more episodes on that, but I was just like, when he kissed her, I was like, you deserve this moment, even if it was a little premature, because I was just like, come to her all alone. I was really feeling for him, man. But yeah,
I mean, we've been waiting forever for this moment, but I do wish there was a little bit more development.
Yeah, I was, like, really, really anticipating how she was going to react. Like, when the last episode ended last week, I was going to be like, what kind of emotions is she going to be feeling? Like, how's she going to deal with this? And it was like,
well, anticlimactic.
Yeah. But I think she definitely did feel a lot of, like, well, she hated Kangto, but she was also, like, you could see in the flashback, she kept thinking of all those times that, like, he kept pretty much implying he was Gaxitao, and she just, like, spat in his face and was like, I hate you, you're the devil, blah, 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 you, Gaxitao should live and you should die and whatever. I thought the young master was going to be Gaxitao, and it's like, he is Gaxitao! Yeah. And, like, tell her, and she was feeling, like, a little bit of not regret, but just, like, I don't know what the right term for it is, but definitely some remorse for saying all those things to Kangto, who actually was Gaxitao. And also the fact that, yeah, he, after he started to become Gaxitao, he didn't, like, do all that awful stuff, you know?
Yeah. But she just didn't get it. So, I think she's much smaller than that, but, I mean, if that's the way that we want to develop Mokdarn, then I guess that's the way it's gotta go.
Yeah, I think we'll see how this plays out, but I was really happy that he has someone else on his side now, that someone else knows that. He doesn't have to carry the burden of his identity all by himself.
Yeah, he doesn't have to carry the burden of being Gaxitao by himself.
Only with all of his eyes.
Yeah. One last note about this episode. I have to give props to Park Ki-woong, because he is, like, so great as an evil person. Or not an evil person inherently, I guess, but the way he acts Shinji, it's so hard to tell whether Shinji means it or whether he's just out to get Gaxitao. And I have to give props to Park Ki-woong, because even when he's trying to be comforting, I still feel, like, this really cold vibe coming from him.
Oh, yeah. He's, like, he's doing really well. I can't tell if he's being sincere or not anymore. Like, literally, I'm just, like,
Like, I'm just like, who are you?
Like, yeah.
Or what's, like, I can't really tell. And sometimes I'm just like, oh, it's the old Shinji. And then other times, like, oh, no.
It's not. It's still crazy Shinji. Superintendent Shinji. Yeah, I totally. Yeah, I gotta give props to that man. He's doing, he's acting really great as Shinji. Because that is a difficult character to act out, I think. In my opinion.
Yeah. And I totally love it when him and Lala get in the same room because they're just like
bunny shooting, heads.
Killing each other with their eyes.
I know. So great, the dynamic between him and Lala.
Yeah, they get together, like, Lala's true colors really come out. She's not the composed, like, chairman's daughter anymore. Like, she's, like...
She's... You know, slipping up a little, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this that was our thoughts on the latest episode of Gaxitao. The extended recap's already posted on our site, so you can read that for the full, you know, detailed explanation / just play-by-play of what happens in episode 18. Otherwise, email us or let us know on our Tumblr what you guys thought of this episode.
Surprise at the end of the post.
Yeah. Or comment on the post, yeah. Next up, we are going to review City Hunter after a short music break.
Goodbye, don't cry and smile. 가슴 시리던 시간들 모두 다 보내줄 거야. So goodbye, 어둠 속 where the love. 난 네가 필요해. I need your lover, yeah.
Okay, so City Hunter. It's loosely based off the manga, City Hunter. When I say loosely based, I mean very loosely based. This drama was released last year, I think, and takes place in Seoul, modern-day Seoul, 2011, and the story features Yoon Sung, who's, on the surface, he's a talented MIT graduate who works on the internal communications team in the Blue House. But his true self is he's planning revenge on 5 politicians who caused his father's death with his surrogate father, Lee Jun-pyo, and he eventually becomes the City Hunter. And in the first, like, few episodes, it goes over his background and all of the stuff that leads up to the person that he is in the future in modern day Seoul, like the person he is then, all of the things, all of the events that shapes him to become this not ruthless but bent on revenge person who can't give it up, much like Gaxtel, I guess, although Gaxtel's revenge plan is, I think, is deeper just because of the way that the screenwriters developed the character in Gaxtel. But anyway, back to City Hunter. You do get to find out about his past, and then it's not until a few episodes in before we actually see Lee Min-ho in his full-on City Hunter aura awesomeness.
And dude, he's awesome!
Yeah. As we said, Lee Min-ho plays Yoon Sung, or John Lee, as he's supposed to be, because he's supposed to be an MIT graduate, so guess what? He has an English name. It's his first name. Park Min-young's in this as Kim Na-na, who also, she's a bodyguard in the Blue House, but she also runs into Yoon Sung as she... Well, I'll explain the relationship a little bit later. Lee Jun Hyuk is Kim Young Ju. Kim Sang Ho is Lee Jun Pyo, or Lee Sung's dad, his surrogate dad, who was best friends with his real dad, Lee Sung's real dad. And Kim Sang Ho is Baemin Duk, or kind of like Lee Sung's nanny, or his babysitter. This is his role. He's like the sidekick. But no. Relationship between the characters. Park Min Young's the love interest, obviously. And the only... Eun-sung has an interest in Kim Nana's relationship, well-being, because Baemin Duk, who's his babysitter, who he cares about a lot, really cares about Kim Nana, and he really wants to make sure that she's okay and she's being taken care of. And we find out the reason why for this in this season. And yeah, Lee Jun Pyo's Eun Sung's father, and he originally stole Eun Sung from his mom because his mom. Obviously, his dad died in, you find in the first episode, his dad dies in this mission that him and Jun Pyo were both on, that they were sent by the Blue House, but they Blue House ended up killing all of them, killing their own countrymen. And so Jun Pyo takes Eun Sung away from his mom, who was still alive, and disappears with him, and Eun Sung doesn't really find out about that part until much later. And so yeah, we do get more development about Eun Sung's character and his past and things like that. This was produced by Kim Yong Sup, who did Athena Goddess 4, Midas, My Girl, and it's really, really obvious with the action scenes. These are some really great action scenes in City Hunter. It's directed by Jin Yuk, who did Prosecutor Princess, Shining Inheritance, Painter of the Wind. You know, pretty great dramas, although on a little bit different from City Hunter. And it was written by Hwang Yun-kyung, who hasn't really done much aside from City Hunter, although they are writing the new Hyundai Lovers.
Yeah.
So, that's a little bit of background on City Hunter. What did you think about this drama? What did you like or / dislike? / what is your opinion of this drama?
Okay, well, first of all, I love the action scenes. Like, some of these action scenes reminded me so much of the Bourne movies.
Yeah, these are really, really great action scenes. Eun Sung really uses his resources, and he's not really a flashy person in this drama. He doesn't like the over-the-top action. He goes about, these are like really subtle action scenes. It's like, use what you got.
Yeah, and he just takes people out like, bam, bam, okay, you're dead now.
Yeah, one of the first episodes where he's in modern day Seoul. It's a great action scene is when he uses a spoon. Yeah. That was really cool.
Yeah, that's what reminded me of the Bourne movies.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, pick up spoon. Becomes deadly weapon.
Yeah. Second, I think half the reason why I love this show was Lee Minho was in it, and he was just really, really good as like the main character, and the chemistry between him, like Lee Eun Sung and Kim Nana, was just really, really good. And it had like comedic relief too, even though it was like tortured, like the Korean people murdered their own soldiers. And one of the most heartbreaking things was Steve Lee or Lee Jim Pyo. The guy who played him was really good, because you could understand why he did what he did, because I mean, his best friend died right before his eyes. But at the same time, you're just like, just let Ian Sung do his thing. Like, just let him live his life. And, like, don't drag him down, like, in this revenge plan. But at the same time, it was like, he was his father figure, but yet he was still, like, the lines blurred on who was good, who was bad, like, just so many times in this drama that happened. And it was so good. One, because of the action scenes. Two, because of the chemistry. And yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, I really like this a lot too. Except, I will say, I don't think this was a masterpiece, but I was really into like the first few episodes of this show. Like the first half of the show, most of this I really liked. The only thing I wish was that they did more developing near the end. It just seemed like they were really, really rushed, and there wasn't as much, they weren't as subtle with Eun-sung's like development and his transformation, because he's supposed to be this person who's like bent on revenge, and they don't develop the changes in his character that well, and I wish they kind of did that better. And another thing is Junpyo's character. He's like a lot more complicated than the show, you know, put on. Like, he could be a lot more complicated, and I wish they made him more multifaceted, because he wasn't the bad guy, like, by any means, but
he also was
near the end, they kind of portrayed him as the bad guy. And I was a little bit disappointed in that.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily portrayed him as the bad guy in the end, because at the end, he did give himself up for the Eun-sung. Like, you know,
okay, dude, spoiler.
Oh, whoopsies. Okay. Oh, well.
I can't edit that out.
Dang. Then I can't counter-argue you. So spoil the end.
You can just say...
Okay, well, okay. I think that... Okay, Steve Lee, which I love his name, Steve Lee. But I think that... Yeah, they could have developed him in certain areas, and maybe the end did feel a little rushed, especially because apparently the reason why Lee and Sung changed was because of Kim Na-na, which I don't really see how that...
Yeah, I did not buy that. I mean, yeah, the chemistry was really good, but I still didn't see how she could have made him change everything.
Because, I mean, yeah, the chemistry was great, but I didn't see enough of her personality coming through and affecting him to that extent. So, whatever. But it doesn't matter, because I still love the show. And, yeah, and Steve Lee, I don't think they portrayed him as a bad character, especially because of what happens at the end, which you'll have to watch to find out what happens at the end. But he just does something that just proves that... And, yes... Eun-sung, he's not just using him because...
Can you repeat that? Because you kind of, like, went out.
What? How far back?
Just that one sentence.
Whatever. I don't know what the one sentence was. Okay, well, yeah, I don't think Steve Lee was necessarily portrayed as the bad character at the end because of what happens at the end, and you'll have to watch the ending to see what happens, but he just does something that shows that he really does love Eun-sung. Like, this he really does love him as a son. He didn't just use him as a part of his revenge plan for his best friend. Like, he really did grow to love this person and do anything for him, and he does something in the end that makes me think that that's true, and that's why I don't think he's necessarily a bad guy. And yeah, they could have worked more on character development for all the characters, but I think the point of the show wasn't more about, like, as much as I would have liked it to focus on character development, I think they marketed it more for the action, which I think they definitely accomplished.
Yeah, the action is really, really great in this show. It's just the production of this drama was really, really good. Action scenes were so well done. I loved them.
And I thought the script was pretty, like, even though character development may have been lacking, I thought the script was really good, too. Just, like, how they go about, like, exposing these politicians who are really corrupt.
Just yeah, and I think the background that they provided was also pretty sound. It's just, like, near the end of the show was when they started slipping and loose ends were not tied as neatly as they could have been.
Use, like, maybe a 2 or 3 episode extension at least.
Yeah, I think an extension probably would have helped with the show. I mean, they were getting pretty great ratings on this show, so I don't know what TV stations decide sometimes, especially with, like, this show, and then Gentleman's Dignity not getting an extension.
Absolutely, Gene does.
Yeah. But yeah, overall, I really did like this drama. It was one of those, again, this is like another one of those guilty pleasure dramas where, actually a little bit better than a guilty pleasure drama. Because the first few episodes and like the background of Ian Sung is really, you know, well developed, I think, in my opinion. And the action scenes are great. And
the cinematography in the first few episodes is really good.
Yeah. But it's just the way the show finishes, like the final couple few episodes, is what keeps me back from like absolutely loving this drama.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would give it a flawed masterpiece. I don't know about you.
I would say it's a masterpiece in my, well, I don't know. I would say it's a masterpiece just based on my feeling, because I just love this show. It's really good. And I would watch it over and over if I wanted to.
This show was also, like, packed with really big, well, not big names, but pretty recognizable faces in the Korean drama world. Like, the president guy is currently in Gaksi Town right now, and you'll recognize, like, a bunch of the people that are in it. So, pretty big names in there. Pretty good production value. Yeah, I would give it a masterpiece just because that's just in my opinion and not on a technical level at all. So,
okay. Yeah, so we disagree a little bit about our opinion on this drama. Sandy thinks it's a masterpiece. I think it's a flawed masterpiece, which is almost there, just not quite. What do you guys think? You can give us your opinions. Again, all the various methods, email, Tumblr, commenting, whatever you'd like. But that is our review of City Hunter. And that does conclude this week's episode. I hope you had fun listening. We had fun talking about a great episode of Gaksi Town and City Hunter, one of our favorite dramas. Again, what do you think? What did you guys think of this episode? Contact us. But that's all for this week, and stay tuned for next week, where we will again recap Gaksi Town, and hopefully A Gentleman's Dignity will be back on air. And
we'll also do our first impressions of High End Day Lovers.
Our first impressions of High End Day Lover. And maybe a little bit impressions of Reply 1997, which is a drama that I just recently became really interested in. And maybe we'll give a small impression of that, but not like a full review or recap or anything like that. And we'll also be reviewing Queenie Nyun's Man, which was a really popular drama that came out earlier this year. Look forward to next week's episode. Thanks, guys.
Oh, and this is the CM Blue song that we both love.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
그댈 보면 얼굴이 빨개지고 그댈 보면 가슴이 두근두근 아이처럼 수줍기만 하고 그댈 보면 괜시리 웃음이 나 바보처럼 자꾸만 그래 아마 내게 사랑이 온 건가 봐
그대는 내 마음속에 president 내 가슴에 별을 수놓지 I'm genie for you girl 내 숨을 먹게 하지 그대가 원하는 건 다 너를 사랑하니까 내 사랑의 이유는 없잖아 you know 그대는 darling 밤하늘 별빛보다 아름다워요 내 맘속 깊은 곳에서 반짝거리는 나만의 사랑빛 그대를 사랑해요 darling 내 곁에서 빛을 내줘요 매일 밤 바라보고